Paper 34, section 6, which is old single column, page 380. All right. So now, if we finished up the previous section, recall that they were, what that last little paragraph was, if you look, just right to the previous paragraph before section 6, they were summing things up and just making sure that before you went into the next section, you were focused on all three of the Spirit ministries working together. That you have the Holy Spirit, Spirit of Truth, and then the thought adjusters, and even though every individual has a thought adjuster, recognizing that beyond that immediate, individuation, they function as one ministry. So that whole issue of Spirit ministry functioning together as one, it starts there with all of the countless Father fragments, in effect being one ministry. And then you have those three ministries. Remember, I pointed out you can take the three recognition of the threefold actuality up to a higher level and appreciate that those three are tying into the threefold actuality pattern of the Holy Spirit being the Spirit of fact, and the Spirit of truth is the truth element, and the adjusters are the Spirit of goodness. So that you have fact, truth, and goodness. So there's obviously a potential for a harmonization of those, or an understanding of the harmonization of those. And that's what immediately they're going to comment on as you begin the next section. So let's just start in here.
6. The Spirit and man. With the advancing evolution of an inhabited planet and the further spiritualization of its inhabitants, additional spiritual influences may be received by such mature personalities. As mortals progress in mind control and spirit perception, these multiple spirit ministries become more and more coordinate in function. They become increasingly blended with the over-ministry of the Paradise Trinity.
Okay, so the first thing is just, as they're talking about...
Mouse?
Yes.
Okay. As they're talking about, this idea of having even more ministries than the three, okay, this is something that, when you see that, it's like, well, what are they talking about? That's rather curious. I've been trying to come to terms with, just the fact that there's three things that I have to think about relative to where I started from my, Christian upbringing, say, where I had something that was usually called the Holy Spirit, or maybe if I'm really old-fashioned, it was called the Holy Ghost. I had some idea of something besides, a father-son. What exactly, they're talking about here, that even goes beyond having the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, and the Thought Adjuster. Well, the first thing that you can think about in that regard is way up in paper 194. You don't have to turn. I'm not going to really read, but just you may remember that way up in paper 194 on the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth, they throw in an interesting list of 7 different spirit ministries. Okay,
they said, and these seven spirits of advancing worlds are. It's like, oh, the advancing worlds. You know, that's what they were just referring to here with, you know, with the advancing evolution of an inhabited planet. Okay, so, the first thing that, if you're, really kind of, tuned in to the various parts of the Revelation, it's like, oh yeah, that's right, there's that list. And so you go there and you go, oh, okay, yeah, so there's the thought adjusters, there's the Holy Spirit, there's the Spirit of Truth. They throw in the adjutant mind spirits as one of the seven. They talk about some mysterious spirit influence that's not immediately understandable, that's supposedly you're engaging in after you're a finaliter. But they do talk about two things that seem to have some immediate understanding. They talk about the spirit ministry, the spirit presence of the eternal mother son, and then they mention the spirit mind, as a hyphenated thing, spirit mind presence of the infinite mother spirit. So, that little augmentation, can at least get you started on, what else might be going on as you acquire ability to engage higher things. Oh yeah, that's definitely higher things. You're thinking, directly I'm starting to sense the presence of the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit. So that would certainly seem to speak to something that's quite advancing. You had a thought there?
So they're always here, or are they like the Spirit of Truth where they get bestowed at a certain time, or you think they're here, and if you just happen to be, as they say, some people can be at a very high state, or that those people can actually access?
Okay, there's no one on the planet that's going to be able to have this right now. I mean, there's nowhere near the genetic foundation and whatnot for this to be having. But yes, the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit's presence has always been, in the universe of universes. It's just a matter as worlds, systems, constellations, local universes, etc., as things finally get elevated up high enough, then it isn't such a high reach to get to the, to start to benefit more directly from these ministries. Right now, it's just going to be a very indirect sort of thing, nothing that you could appreciate in some sort of distinct way. Okay. And then on top of that, beyond kind of anything that is directly talked about in the Revelation, the more you say, think about, when I started putting things on this psychic circles and the sevenfold chart, when I start, talking about the Eternal Mother Son, the Infinite Mother Spirit, you see them there. Here's the Creative Mother Spirit, but then you're reminded, there's these other levels of God the Mother. Reflective Mother Spirits, Creative Mother Agencies, the Ancients of Days, the Universal Mother, directly at the Supreme level. And so you're thinking, okay, there's probably actually a lot of different phases of spirit ministry that you would tune into at different levels. Okay, so basically just appreciating that there's lots and lots of complexity, and it's sort of all wrapped into that, between the lines of this statement, these additional spiritual influences received by mature personalities. Okay, now a little bit more specific. Notice that they don't just talk about spirit perception there, but mind control. See, and that's what was behind my statement, my response to you is, you have to have very, very high levels of mind, consecration of mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, because he kind of fundamentally, these are mother-like holistic ministries, and you know, and that's just something that's not there in early stages of worlds, you know, even amongst the most advanced individual. Right. I mean, you know, he's still true man of that time, you know, not true man of, you know, a million years from now or something. Right. So, you know, but of course, during his public ministry, he has, you know, he has access to that stuff as Michael. But, you know, as Jesus, you know, it's a different thing. Okay, so you definitely see have that element of consecration of mind there at a very high level, you know, of self mastery and mind control. Okay, but all in all, you know, they say the following: these multiple spirit ministries. See, so no matter how many there are that you might have access to or whatever, they become more and more coordinate. So you know, right away, you know, okay, we're talking about at least Mother, you know, if not also Trinity, they want us to think about. They become more and more coordinate in function. They become increasingly blended with the over-ministry of the Paradise Trinity. So sure enough, there's the Paradise Trinity. So what are they trying to remind you of? Just as you've heard me stress several times, from the highest being, you know, starting with the Universal Father on down, the whole process is cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. So if the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Infinite Spirit, the Creator Son, you know, Master Son, Creative Mother Spirit, you know, all those beings have put themselves in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, they're personal ministries are going to be in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. You know, see, that's what they're really saying there. It's just reminding you that the ministries couldn't do anything but become increasingly blended with the over-ministry of the Paradise Trinity because those beings whose ministries they are in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Okay, so, and as you start to think about some of those higher ministries, we're not going to, you know, get into the details right now, but as you actually start to technically think about what some of those higher spirit ministries would be, you know, you can appreciate all the more directly their relationship to the Paradise Trinity. You know, if nothing else, you can think, well, if I get up to the Supreme, I mean, I know they tell me up front in the Revelation that the personality and spirit attributes are derived from the Paradise Trinity, you know, of the Supreme Being or the Universal Mother down in time and space. So, yeah, so you see that very direct relationship to the Paradise Trinity. All right, then let's get some more here.
Although divinity may be plural in manifestation, in human experience, deity is singular, always one. Neither is spiritual ministry plural in human experience. Regardless of plurality of origin, all spirit influences are one in function. Indeed, they are one, being the spirit ministry of God the sevenfold in and to the creatures of the grand universe. And as creatures grow in appreciation of and receptivity for this unifying ministry of spirit, it becomes, in their experience, the ministry of God the Supreme.
Okay. So, right, so you kind of see some of the things we were just talking about there. Now look, they're bringing in a little bit more specificity. So if you didn't think of the example as you start reading, they give you the clue later on, and they say, indeed, they are one, being the spirit ministry of God the sevenfold. Okay, so just go back to the beginning there, and they're saying, although divinity may be plural in manifestation, in human experience, deity is singular, always one. Okay, so, you know, especially if you think about a particular facet of deity, like, say, the sevenfold, personalized as God the sevenfold. Okay, so as one facet of deity, the sevenfold, obviously deity is singular. You know, always one. But what's this capital capital D divinity thing about. Okay, as I think I've mentioned recently, when they use a capital D on divinity, they mean, you know, in general, divinity means deity likeness. If they capitalize divinity, they mean deity likeness in a direct sense. It's deity likeness because that divinity is literally directly of deity. It's not something that started out, in some very imperfect state, you know, like me, and worked my way all the way to being perfect on paradise and being able to appropriately be labeled divine in a finite sense. It's not that kind of divinity. I didn't start branching out of deity. Right? But if you think about something that would stem from the sevenfold, it's obvious, you know, and it's divinity, it's going to be capital D divinity. So what exactly are they referring to? Well, from the unity viewpoint, you just have the one facet of deity, the sevenfold. But from the individuality viewpoint, you've got all kinds of individuals. You've got all the sevenfold creators. You know, you have all the ancients of days, you have all the master spirits, you got all the, you know, creator sons, creator mother spirits, etc. Well, and you also have all the sevenfold controllers. Okay, and even though they're not, you know, a lot of them aren't even personalities in any way that is appropriate to label them as such, like a Frandalank. Okay, all of those individuals, which they tell you are beyond your concept, you know, in number, you know, because of the Frandalanks, that's all capital D divinity too. All the sevenfold controllers, all the sevenfold creators, those are all individual capital D divinity facts. You know, every master physical controller is the sevenfold deity expressed as an individual in some way. Okay, so that's the extreme example of capital D divinity may be plural in manifestation. Yeah, no kidding. You turn it around and it's many. Okay, what if you start with a different facet of deity, like the sun? Okay, and turn that around and look at that from the individuality viewpoint. Then you see why the word may is this. Although divinity may be plural in manifestation, but if I turn that around, I just, the only individual that I know of is whom? The eternal sun. Yeah, so it's not plural, singular. Okay, so that's what they're trying to get you to, you know, as an advanced student, when you start to, you know, get this whole deity thing, you know, that's what they're alluding to there. Okay.
But to me, this is also saying that, you know, from a human viewpoint, i.e., from how we can perceive it, that the spirit influences that are happening are, you know, we're not meant to necessarily dissect them. They're all working together, even though they may be the influence from this particular being or that particular being. As far as our experience is concerned, at this level, there, you know, it's hard for us to differentiate. So it all comes in as one experience.
Right. So that's the
beauty of it from my point of view.
Right. So that's, you know, obviously the translation. You know, see, they didn't start out with spirit. They started out with deity, because they wanted to give you the big picture. And then they're saying, okay, so, you know, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. Okay, well, now let's drop this understanding of unity down a notch to where it's made substance. Unity made substance is spirit substance, you know, and the spirit ministries of that substance, you know, that are within that substance. You know, and so that's what they say. Neither is spiritual ministry. They're trying to motivate you, and just see, to appreciate that these spirit ministries are a downstepped expression of a pattern that's on high with deity and divinity. Okay, so like John was just saying there, regardless of plurality of origin, all spirit influences are one in function. Okay, and so yes, in terms of just you know, especially just your initial spiritual experience, your personal spiritual experience, what initially you can experience and what you need to experience, it is one. And that's important, so that you don't have to try to do something complicated to start with. You know, as a very immature child of God, you need to do something very simple. Okay? Why does the fifth epical revelation go into all this complexity, though? Because as you go from a child of God to an adult of God, you're going beyond just you and your religious experiences. You're going to a philosophic level of that whole bit about mind control, that whole bit about being able to bring your mind into synchrony with the cosmos, into conformity with the cosmos. Only a mind that definitively, it doesn't have to definitively separately experience, but it consciously recognizes the distinction, you know, as it's taught to us about, oh, okay, so the part, you know, conceptually the part of the ministry that I'm experiencing that doesn't come from the Creator Son, that comes from the Creative Mother Spirit, you know, say my logical acumen. Okay, so that whole bit of recognizing, appreciating the differences, even though you can't see, oh, here's the boundary line of the Holy Spirit, and that's the Spirit of Truth over here. You know, you won't be able to see that boundary line because they're all, you know, but conceptually, you recognize that there are different things that you're doing. It's one thing for me to directly recognize truth. It's a different thing for me to directly recognize right and wrong.
Well, why do they say in the last part there that it's all connected through the Supreme? Okay. Does that mean that?
Well, they're just
supposed to recognize that, or you're supposed to sort of understand it and not necessarily try to take the time to recognize it.
You're not supposed to try to be able to discern literally with, you know, right, to see, you know, here's one and here's one, because you can't do that. Okay, but you are supposed to philosophically appreciate the difference, you know, and that when you go to an adult, you're going to be differentiating and thinking precisely. You're going to acknowledge these differences of ministry, and the very fact that you hold a consciousness of the individuality in your mind, even if you can't see it in some direct way. But the recognition and holding that individuality in your mind, see, now you have the unity that kind of just came naturally as a child, juxtaposed with individuality, and there can be associativity, there can be triunity, there can be a cosmic structure, and that can synchronize. If you never attempt to appreciate the difference between logical acumen and moral discrimination, if you never reflect on the distinction, if you just say, well, you know, God takes care of all the details, you can never become an adult. This is what they're trying to get us to appreciate, you know, is to go up from science and religion to philosophy, and that what's above is what is interfaced with the cosmos, most technically. You know, bringing the other two, of course, up through it and, you know, and into relationship, not separate from religion, not separate from science, but, you know, the spear point of contact with the cosmos is a philosophic coordination. There's a section in the book, it's even in the religion papers, you know, it's entitled that. See, where they're trying to get you to go, it's like, okay, you've got a religious start, now you need to work it up. You need to establish a philosophic coordination of your religious consciousness and your experience. So, how do I do that? What is that? See, that's it. That involves why there's 2,000 pages in this book, and why Jesus didn't give anyone a book. Michael gave us a book. But we're now trying to go to that next notch where it's not like you have to know these details to be saved or anything like that. It's not a spiritual issue.
After you was here, realize how full conscious.
it's It's an issue of establishing the kind of forms in your mind that actually do synchronize with the cosmos. Those forms have to have individuation in them. If they're just unity, they don't actually synchronize. Yep, there's something coming
in. Winston asks, is it possible to clarify that adult versus the child in the favorable conditions area?
Again, there's higher and higher levels of favorable conditions. Jesus spoke to the favorable conditions for getting started. The fifth epical revelation is speaking to the favorable conditions to go beyond started, to taking one step, two steps, three steps, 500 steps, 10 million steps. Higher and higher the favorable conditions grow. You have to establish a more extensive favorable condition. Now, it's the same in truth, let's just say it that way, all the way up. But in fact, it's quite different. It's just efforting to not stop at any point. Always allowing yourself to keep going up to higher levels of coordination. Because the multiple ministries become more and more coordinate. There's levels of coordination. Those worlds that are in advanced stages, that's what they're doing. They're moving up to higher and higher levels of coordination. If you want to be part of more advancing things, see, that's what you've got to be doing. Even to go up to psychic circles, you've got to do this. There's those cosmic levels, not spiritual levels. So just relating to the unity of the spiritual ministries doesn't get you up any of the cosmic levels, doesn't move you along the psychic circles, because they're not spiritual levels. It's not about higher and higher levels of relationship to unity. Doesn't get you. You're stuck. That's why you've got some intensely spiritual people on the planet who are seventh circlers. And if you judge them by just with a spiritual eye, it's like, well, that must be a first circler. And those who know are going, well, if you only knew. That's actually a seventh circler. That the fact that they're intensely to one side on the seventh circle, you think that means they've gone up. No, they've just gone way to one extreme on the seventh circle, on that first cosmic level. They haven't actually gone up yet. So that's what they're trying to teach us. This is something that we've just never appreciated. We couldn't really appreciate it from what Jesus did, because he did it through the apostles, and the apostles couldn't comprehend the cosmic things he said. All they could understand was the spiritual stuff, and they twisted, muddled that up even. But now we can go and we can read what Jesus actually did, even put into fifth epical parlance by the midwayers. And it's like, whoa, this is intensely cosmic in construct. This isn't just spiritual. So that's this is this great challenge to try to figure this out. And I'm just trying to, encourage you that the way you get started with this new form of mind is just allowing yourself to intellectually think about these differences and try to, so it's like, okay, so there's a Holy Spirit and there's a Spirit of Truth. Yes, in terms of my immediate experience, I experienced this one, but that, why do I need to think about it? Because it's just important to get some individuation in your mind. Bring some individuation into your spiritual consciousness. All right. So then, you see them reminding you as the God the sevenfold there. As creatures grow in appreciation of and receptivity for this unified ministry of the Spirit, it becomes, in their experience, the ministry of God the Supreme. When they say God the Supreme, as I pointed out, they're telling you to take the unity viewpoint. And in terms of bringing that unity viewpoint down into the finite, the personal purposive is God the Mother. Right? that, like I was just pointing out, what we're really talking about is levels of mother ministry, you know, and this ubiquitous whole that you're consecrating to, you know, various downstepped expressions of the Paradise Trinity, if you will, within that mother ministry, you know, with the universal mother being over the whole finite. You know, so that's what they're reminding you of there. You know, just like I said, you know, if you look on this psychic circles chart, you know, you go up and you get to the universal mother, you know, or God the Supreme as God the Mother, you know, God the Mother of the total finite. You know, not God the Mother of the total absentite, you know, that's a higher thing, but God the Mother of the total finite. All right. Okay, so now a little bit more here.
From the heights of eternal glory, the Divine Spirit descends by a long series of steps to meet you as you are and where you are, and then, in the partnership of faith, lovingly to embrace the soul of mortal origin and to embark on the sure and certain retracements of those steps of condescension, never stopping until the evolutionary soul is safely exalted to the very heights of bliss from which the Divine Spirit originally sallied forth on this mission of mercy and ministry.
Okay, so you know, again, they're, you know, reminding you of this, of moving up. Most of that is pretty straightforward. You know, why do they say sallied forth? They're talking about spirit ministries. Spirit is self-animating. You know, so it rushes out. It sallies forth. They're just reminding you of that self-animating nature of spirit. And they're, before they started talking a little bit more about what it sounds like they're referring to going up to paradise, you know, they've brought in this, the deity things, you know, and remember, you know, you continue on this after paradise too. So in a higher context, you know, to get back to where it came from, you're going to have to go all the way up. You have to go a lot beyond your experiences on paradise as a finaliter. You know, so that's sort of there to recognize, you know, beyond your, you know, the immediacy of recognizing as the goal of the ascension scheme. It isn't just coming down from the top of your ascension scheme.
Heights of bliss seems like something they wouldn't always use.
Yeah, see, that's what I was saying. See, you know, there's a bit of a, they're trying to make it a little bit more immediate, understandable, of hearkening to paradise, you know, and the bliss, you know, idea of paradise. See, but in a higher sense, you know, you have an infinite climb, and it's not an infinite climb to get to paradise and become a finaliter. You know, that doesn't take forever. So, okay, let's see. So let's get some more here.
Spiritual forces unerringly seek and attain their own original levels. Having gone out from the eternal, they are certain to return there too, bringing with them all those children of time and space who have espoused the leading and teaching of the indwelling adjuster, those who have been truly born of the Spirit, the faith sons of God.
Okay. Just to kind of play a little bit with what I was just saying. Spiritual forces unerringly seek and attain their original levels, having gone out from the eternal. You know, he didn't say the eternal Son. Just that, you know, way of saying it. What they're referring to, going really, in terms of our conceptual understanding of unpacking the I Am, really going above when we start thinking about deity directly. You know, in other words, all the way, like I was just saying. You know, when they occasionally throw in, you know, like, and they'll say the universal, the eternal, the infinite, you know, rather than, you know, using those as adjectives, but just using them as nouns like that, that's hearkening to, in the beginning was the I Am, you know, and before there was anything, you know, taking you all the way up to those sorts of levels. Okay, so so it's there between the lines. Now, did you notice bringing with them all those children of time and space who have espoused? Have you ever stopped to think about that word? Spouse, right? Okay. How many times when they're talking about your relationship to the adjuster do they say betrothal? Betrothed, right? So they're purposely bringing in the mother, father, male, female, recognition. Because, as you see, as I've just, giving you a cursory sense of talking about this, we're needing to talk about God the Mother. And look at what, is between the lines there. If you espoused and remembering the betrothal thing, it's like, well, if I'm thinking about the adjuster, leading and teaching of the indwelling adjuster, that's got to be the father side. Oh, so I'm the mother side. See, in that relationship. We are, like I've been emphasizing for a long time now, begin to recognize that, when we're talking about your relationship to the Universal Father, you can speak of yourself as being a son. But before you're really officially an ascending son, which is at fusion, long before that, you were a child of the mother. And when all is said and done, we really are Trinity origin beings. Not existentially, but experientially, we're Trinity origin beings. And what stems from the Trinity is the mother, not the father. And you just see it right here. We're not the son side or the father side of this betrothal. Right? Our soul and that thought adjuster and that point of spirit conception, okay, which is female-like and which is male-like, okay, which is the place and which is injection into the place, okay, at that fusion point, that spirit fusion point, just like the material fusion point at your material conception. All right, so they're trying to get you to recognize this, that it's about the Trinity and the mothers, so much of what we really are foundationally. All right, you see at the end there, they do remind you, faith sons of God. Before you're an ascending son, you are a faith son. Okay, before fusion. So there is this relationship to the Father. We're not trying to shove the Father off to the side, we're just trying to appreciate that we have a father and a mother, and there's different aspects of it, of us, that are mother and father. And very much in terms of the two consecrations we always talk about, my son-like aspect, my father-related aspect is the part of me that consecrates a will. That's a father-like part. But the mind that I consecrate, that's my mother-like part. I have those two aspects because I have two parents. Okay, and it's just humans have just never distinguished that and really brought in that recognition of in many ways the substance of you. Your will is, your personality is, you can't even think of it as a force or anything. It's not a substance in any way. It's like, so it's this vague influence that you're trying to appreciate the existence of. But what about the substance of me? So the substance of you is of the mother. And it's being directed by the father-like nature. But you're of the mother directly in terms of a substance. Yeah.
So what really kind of got me on this is that, to me, it was kind of comforting to know that these spirit forces are seeking. And they don't stop till they seek, and then they bring me back with them. Me, that's as opposed to it all has to be totally my will, so to speak.
Right.
If you can kind of somehow have to take comfort in realizing that they're doing just as much work as you are, or maybe more so, in trying to, in reaching out for you, reaching you,
right,
grab you and bring you home.
Right. All you have to do is just, you know, give them permission to engage you. And what's engaging you is self-animating. See? And this is what you're getting at there. See, it's fundamentally self-animating. You don't have to animate. That's what you're getting at. See, it's like you don't have to, like, you know, eat more food, you know, to make that basic part happen. You know, it's that engagement is self-animating. It can't, there's no off switch. It can't, you know, not be seeking you. It's self-animating. And once it finds you, once it grabs you, spirit gravity then pulls you up. And you don't have to burn more calories to make spirit gravity work either. You see, so both of those things happen automatically. But you do have to burn some calories, you know, to supply the favorable conditions. You know, that part, you know, if you want more ability for that self-animating thing to happen, more ability for spirit gravity to lift you up, you know, get the footprint bigger. Okay, so now they shift gears. So that was kind of the little bit more of the philosophic component. And now they're going to shift gears and kind of speak to your religious consciousness. And you immediately can suspect that if you just glance, you see all kinds of phrases with quote marks around them. They're going to start quoting from the Bible. They're going to be quoting from the New Testament. Even more specifically, almost all the quotes are Paul, with a little bit of John thrown in. Okay, I'm not going to, you know, unpack every one of these quotes from the Bible. You know, but they're just, you know, they're from the various Pauline letters. And with a little, like I said, a little bit of the Apostle John thrown in. And they're just going to, the author's going to use those Bible, try to make those Bible passages come alive in the context of all this philosophy that they've been, you know, the author's been trying to give us, this recognition of the greater picture. All right.
The divine spirit is the source of continual ministry and encouragement to the children of men. Your power and achievement is according to his mercy through the renewing of the spirit. Spiritual life, like physical energy, is consumed. Spiritual effort results in relative spiritual exhaustion. The whole ascendant experience is real as well as spiritual. Therefore, it is truly written. It is the spirit that quickens. The Spirit gives life.
Okay, now just you know, notice, you know, the calorie thing is actually coming in there. See, the Spirit ministry itself is coming from a creator being, so you know that doesn't, you know, run down. Okay, but the relationship of that to you can run down. You know, you need to be of a nature that it can engage you, and that you'll start to exhaust that linkage. You know, so you need to rejuvenate that linkage. That's what they're referring to, and because. If you don't, you know, supply the favorable conditions for that, you're going to experience that's going to be a lot tougher. You're going to be a lot less self-animating than you are normally. And you know, it's going to be more of a slog to go through life. And you won't have that spirit that quickens, that spirit that gives life. Little John, little Paul. Okay, see, they actually are tipping the hat to both of them there. All right, so, yep.
I had a question. Mm-hmm. Please clarify, how does self-conceit and self-righteous make a dent in our actual discrimination of the mother and father like will and substance, if you, it is appropriate. Maybe the definitive difference between self-righteousness and self-assertiveness, or is there...
Well, okay, just along those lines, I mean, you know, thinking about that consecration of will and that consecration of mind. See, the reason you can go to self-righteousness is because those two aren't in balance. It's very easy to over-apply your personality relative to the amount of mind that is well-formed and is worthy of being directed by your personality. If you start out with just, you know, the faint little childlike mind that you're given and start turning up the volume on directing it, it will actually turn around and become self-righteous. I mean, maybe think about, I'm trying to use it, think of an analogy. If you have a very long ship, you know, so a long keel, okay, that helps us stabilize it, you know, as it's cutting through the water. If it's really short, it's easy for the thing to flip around. It's not very stable to that motion. But, you know, you get a long thing, you know, you just think of that whole long blade that has to cut and see, so it gives it stability. I mean, this is we start out as this very short little stick, you know, and if you try to, you know, just imagine putting that stick on the water and put your finger behind it and try to push that stick without it flipping on you. No, it won't. But you have a great big long thing, you know, you can get on the back and push it, you know, and it'll stay stable. See, that's what happens. Unwittingly, you flip it around, and it goes from righteousness to self-righteousness. If you haven't consecrated your mind to the universal harmony, if you haven't taken delight in cultivating a mind that has a philosophic character to it, that has individuality and unity and, you know, that's what turns it into this stable phenomenon. It won't flip around so easily. Nod got flipped around. Van, no. Van had enough cosmic character. Nod didn't have enough. I mean, Van had more cosmic character. That's why he was given, you know, the leader of the 10th group. Because that group had to be integrous. That group had to be sophistry proof. The other groups didn't have to be. So those that might get turned around, you know, were given those jobs. And sure enough, guess what? The test came. And all those that weren't long enough flipped around. And those that were stayed true. Okay. So see, again, that's why it's so important to start bringing in, reflecting about, okay, how does the mother fit in? How does the mind fit in? How do these things fit in? If you just fixate on spirit and will, this is where it goes. The exact opposite of what you would think. You know, if you assume that it all just works divinely, and I can push as hard as I want, no, you can't. Okay, if you're going to push harder, you need to be more stable. Okay, keep going here.
The dead theory of even the highest religious doctrines is powerless to transform human character or to control mortal behavior. What the world of today needs is the truth which your teacher of old declared, not in word only, but also in power and in the Holy Spirit. The seed of theoretical truth is dead. The highest moral concepts without effort, unless and until the divine spirit breathes upon the forms of truth and quickens the formulas of righteousness.
Okay, just, you know, the teacher of old is Paul. Now, of course, he's kind of inspired by some of the Old Testament you know, individuals too, with some of his choice of phrasing and whatnot. So there's a little bit more antiquity to it. But like I said, it's basically, we're talking about Paul here. And, you know, the key here is, you know, not the word only. Okay, so, you know, think about how relevant that is to what's sitting in your lap. Okay. Not the word only. You know, there's no truth in the words only. Right? You have to establish a philosophic form in the upper domain of the hourglass and in your higher mind that can rediscover the truths. You know, so if you take the light in cultivating, trying to put a form in your mind that can recognize what's going on with the words here, coincidentally, that will put a form in your mind through which the truth will flow again that was flowing in their mind that inspired them to put the words down. But as soon as they took it out of their mind and down into words, it died, just like they said. You know, as soon as you put it into words, the truth dies. So, see, the spirit will quicken again. But it's not like you can't just sort of think that magically you bring the word up and then boom, the word becomes alive again. That's not how it works. That's just a fact. It can't magically turn into a truth. The truth is a superadditive consequence. There's a relationship between a fact and a goodness and that whole triune thing. That has to happen in your mind. And then, see, they've masterly constructed it so that if you consecrate yourself to the details and everything and get that and re-put that form back up in there, the truth that they want to flow will flow again. That's how the revelation of truth works. It's the same thing even when Jesus is speaking. His words are not truth. That's, for instance, why the midwares, you know, restate everything he said and use all kinds of human sources to put words in Jesus' mouth and all this sort of stuff. Because they have to put a sequence of words on the page that if you consecrate yourself to all the details, all the facts, in relationship to the goodness that you have, the same cosmic structure will form in your mind and the truth will flow again. If they just gave you the direct words of Jesus, you wouldn't get the proper construct, the truth wouldn't flow. That's why, by and large, they don't give you exactly what Jesus said, because it wouldn't be true. Okay? They're not just trying to disclose facts. This is specifically the Aramaic words translated into English that he said or something. That's of no use. Okay? They're trying to give you truth. And so they have to restate everything he said. Because if nothing else, the supreme has moved along in the last 2,000 years. And, you know, and you can't just give it verbatim like he did back then. That is something, see, that's just very, very different than humans have thought. They're thinking, if I could just get the words of Christ, you know, no. There are no words of Christ in part four, in general. They're the words of midwayers and humans. But what's there is the potential to reacquire the truth that was in Jesus' mind when he spoke some Greek or Aramaic words 2,000 years ago. You can get the same truth through different facts and a different relationship to goodness and everything that you have now, which he didn't have then. You know? You can't be Jesus, you know, you can't be a human back then, because it's not then, it's now. And everything's different. See, so this...
Why revelation
does,
has a life.
Right, this is just so important to, you know, what's the difference between fact and truth? And there's nothing, you know, more dead fact than a word. I mean, are any of these words animated? No, they haven't crawled off the page or anything. They're just sitting there, a blob of ink, okay? They're not truth. So if you want to get the revelation of truth, you've got to do this thing we're talking about.
What is that?
You know, this forming, this personal living philosophy, this triune structure in the upper domain of your mind where the capital S spirit ministry engages. And what it engages, you know, that whole fact that it's unity, like I pointed out, you know, if you just take the three, one is individuality, one's associativity, one's unity. One's a spirit of fact, one's a spirit of truth, one's a spirit of goodness. And they're as one ministry. So you can't just do the goodness side and expect to get it, because the one thing you're trying to get has all three elements in it. It isn't just the spirit of goodness. And there is no just, it's like, well, can I just forget about the Holy Spirit and the spirit of truth and just do the goodness thing because I understand that? No, there is no separating. They function as one. You, in order to get one, you have to get all three. You can't get the, you can't benefit from the adjuster if you don't have logical acumen, moral discrimination, in addition to the spiritual insight. Yeah. So this is what they're trying to get us to appreciate, that these what we desire is really quite advanced and complex. And the only reason we have anything right now is because we were given a triune nature by grace, so that we have something to start with. Because the reality is it's quite complex, and it's nothing that any child does. No child chooses a personal living philosophy. They can't. That's impossible. I mean, technically, if everything is going splendidly, you aren't even really up to the task until you're post 40. You know, see, so in many ways, you're living on grace up till then. I mean, and thank goodness for grace. Thank God for grace. See, because, you know, this complex stuff is nothing that any ignorant, immature person can do. Trying to even get a 30-year-old to reflect is not easy. I mean, the mind is not quite that advanced yet.
You've got a 70-year-old to do it.
Right?
I don't know. I like that bumper sticker that hire a teenager while they still know everything.
Yeah. Well, and that's, of course, the problem we're talking about. You know, we have lots of people who think they know everything, think that they're spiritual. It's like, you know, they're trying to explain, no, you don't understand. Okay? It's just like the apostles didn't understand. Okay? To be actually, you know, at these higher levels is very sophisticated mind forms. All right.
Chris?
Yeah?
Got a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Winston said, if we think about them, should we share them like you, or... they are opinion, not fact. The danger is not knowing what we think about. Should we be afraid of making interpretations of the UV in our own study groups? And would we be held accountable for talking about the words, just more concerned about how to discern the whole truth? But about our worldview, how is it to reform a 50-year bad-forming mind? Can we just unthink 50 years of bad worldview?
No. Again, you're not going to do anything negative. You're not going to undo anything. You're not a creator being. Technically, you can't undo anything. You're just going to start humbly wherever you are. You know, like engaging the revelation. Just start looking for something that you can get a hold of and work on getting a more definitive hold on it. Not some wishful thinking, merely spiritual sort of a hold on it, but, you know, think engaging it technically and understandingly and, you know, really getting your teeth into it. Just find a place and start. And that'll grow naturally with time, and all these details will take care of themselves. You know, so, you know, it doesn't matter if you're talking about your own study or working in a study group. Just be humble and start within your recognized humble means. Recognize that you're not an expert on anything to begin with. And so, you know, hold your tongue, by and large, you know, until you start to feel something a little more solid going on, you know. Once you sort of allow that process to start, it'll probably take like 10 years before it starts to, you know, it's like, wait a minute, I think I can, I've got a hold of something here. I think I could maybe actually try to speak to this a little bit. I'll be humble. I'm not going to declare I'm the absolute of this, but, you know, I think maybe there's a little element of certitude that I could put into my expression of this. I think I know something. See, you start small and let it build. It'll be obvious. It's just like what Jesus said to the apostles. I mean, don't try to pre-think it, he said to them. You know, it'll be natural in the moment. You'll know when you actually know something. If you're still wondering, do I know something? You don't know something. Okay? If there's a question, the question answers itself. You'll know. It's self-evident when you actually know something. You know, and you have lots of history you can look back on what it's like to be something that doesn't know. You know, we're all by grace given that point of reference, that immature mind that thinks it knows everything, you know, like the 20-year-old. You remember what that feels like. It's like, that's not what we're talking about. You know, something that just thinks it knows. It's something that genuinely knows, has a humility about it. There's no clamoring about it. There's no, look what I know sort of thought that pops into your head. You know. Right, this is the way, those sorts of things, yeah. Okay.
Those who have received and recognized the indwelling of God have been born of the Spirit. You are the temple of God, and the Spirit of God dwells in you. It is not enough that this Spirit be poured out upon you. The divine Spirit must dominate and control every phase of human experience.
Let's keep reading a little
bit. It is the presence of the divine Spirit, the water of life, that prevents the consuming thirst of mortal discontent and that indescribable hunger of the unspiritualized human mind. Spirit-motivated beings never thirst, for this spiritual water shall be in them a well of satisfaction springing up into life everlasting. Such divinely watered souls are all but independent of material environment as regards the joys of living and the satisfactions of earthly existence. They are spiritually illuminated and refreshed, morally strengthened and endowed.
Okay. They're pointing out that there's some pretty useful expressions in the Old Testament that you can grab a hold of and put them into a new light. And we all recognize the interaction with Nalda there. A well of satisfaction. But look at the technical stuff here. So it is the presence of the divine Spirit, the water of life, that prevents the consuming thirst of mortal discontent and the indescribable hunger. You're going, what part of me are they describing here? Of the unspiritualized human mind. You have two domains, the lower domain of the hourglass and the upper domain. The unspiritualized mind in the lower domain of the hourglass. Okay, that incessant clamoring of inescapable self for recognition and honor. Okay, that's what they're describing. That unspiritualized mind that has no direct relationship to thus capital S spirit, is going to be nothing but a consuming thirst. Mortal discontent and an indescribable hunger. Okay, so just appreciate that. Any degree to which you recognize that state of mind, that's the lower domain of the hourglass within you. Okay, that's the little child that needs a parent. You know, the spiritualized mind in the upper domain. See, that spiritualized mind in the upper domain, it doesn't thirst. The self-animating spirit that's there, see, constantly quenches thirst. Okay, that divinely watered souls, you know, that upper domain, that's what gets made soul, that's what gets copied. You know, that, like I said, that's the part that's watered. And as I was saying, see, that such divinely watered souls are all but independent of material environment as regards the joys of living. So just when they say that, to be basically independent of environment, what kind of joy are we talking about there? Is that sort of mere joy? No, that's happiness. That's the joy of happiness. Because in order for you to be independent of the material environment, that requires choice that's transcendent of environment. You know, a decision is relative to environment. A choice is independent of environment. A choice is independent of space and time. The starker the contrast between what you desire to be and what the environment would make of you, the greater the happiness, the greater the joy of happiness that results from choosing to not be made by the environment, but to stand independent of the environment. Choosing is the key. The mere mindful decision can't do it. The lower domain of the hourglass can only make decisions. It can't make any choices. It's not personal. It's unspiritualized personality, spirit pattern. Okay, your personality engages the spiritualized mind in the upper domain. It can make choices. Okay. It's the parent, there's the child that can only make decisions. And it endlessly makes decisions, because that's what a mind does. It makes decisions. It's incessant clamoring. Decision, decision, decision. It's just, you can't turn it off. It's just constantly making decisions. It's like, well, sure, it would be nice if those decisions were directed. Yeah. You know, you can't say, I'm just going to not be a deciding phenomenon. No, that isn't an option. You are a deciding phenomenon. You need to take control of the situation and start making some choices upon which those decisions are predicated. Spirit directs mind. Personality purposes spirit. It needs to come from the top down. They're just trying to get you to recognize that. All right, keep going here.
In every mortal, there exists a dual nature, the inheritance of animal tendencies and the high urge of spirit endowment. During the short life you live on your rancha, these two diverse and opposing urges can seldom be fully reconciled. They can hardly be harmonized and unified. But throughout your lifetime, the combined spirit ever ministers to assist you in subjecting the flesh more and more to the leading of the spirit. Even though you must live your material life through, even though you cannot escape the body and its necessities, nonetheless, in purpose and ideals, you are empowered increasingly to subject the animal nature to the mastery of the spirit. There truly exists within you a conspiracy of spiritual forces, a confederation of divine powers, whose exclusive purpose is to effect your final deliverance from material bondage and finite handicaps.
Okay, so see the inheritance of animal tendencies, that's your adjutant mind in the lower domain of the hourglass, you know, or the flesh, quote unquote, as they're referring to it there later on. Right, I mean, in this life, perforce you serve two masters. So, you know, that's why the hourglass analogy is very appropriate to understand this life, because, I mean, technically there's an upper and lower domain, you know, forever in your whole ascension, but it's really distinct here, you know, because you have you have this distinct difference between unspiritualized and spiritualized mind, which you won't have when you have Marancha mind, right? Because Marancha mind doesn't just seat on matter, it also seats on spirit. You know, your soul is a weave of spirit and physical energy, right? So, you know, you just, so the lower domain and the upper domain both have spiritualized mind in it. It's just, you know, lower and higher levels of spiritualized mind in, you know, the next life and forevermore. But here, this is very distinct, okay? And so that's what they're, you know, referring to. Just see it in that hourglass image, you know, and have it be, have the neck be very narrow, say, you know, to really keep the two, you know, separate from each other. Let's see. You know, you see the mastery. See, in the spirit, talking about self-mastery, that spiritualized mind beginning to be the master of the unspiritualized mind. And when they, just a little technical thing, because I always point this out, there truly exists within you a conspiracy of spiritual forces, a confederation of divine powers. Why is it a confederation and not a federation of divine powers? If it was a federation, that would mean you would have ministries that were reaching up to spirit, all in common, reaching up to spirit and federating themselves. No, these are spirit ministries. They're at the spirit level. It's a confederation of spirit ministries. Yeah. You know, that's the difference, remember. They use that all over in the Revelation. That's the, you know, the true meaning of that, you know, the difference between a federation and a confederation. You know, whether or not you're humbly reaching up, you know, it's the same root as faith, federal. You know, you're reaching up to, you know, to spirit, you know, and federating. Is there, you know, pride of self? It's like, I don't need to reach up to anything, you know. I'm already at the spirit level, you know. So I'm going to form a confederacy, say. Right? See, that's very purposeful. Lucifer declared a confederation. You know, there's no need to reach up to anything. Our minds are innately divine. We are a confederation. He declared that. You know, see, so just, you know, they're constantly using those, so you can better appreciate.
We're not from the South.
All right, so you just understand why the South called itself the Confederacy. Okay, you know, because, you know, there's no need to somehow mature beyond, you know, and above where we are. What we're doing is just fine. We are a confederation. See, that's the purpose of that name. You know, you know, of course, you know, the root thing is slavery. You know, you're declaring slavery to be innately divine, basically, and, you know, that it's a spiritual fact. And so when you engage on the level of slavery, you're engaging on the spirit level. It's a confederation, not a federation, not like the federal thing that those people say that you have to be. All right. All right, yeah, keep going here.
The purpose of all this ministration is that you may be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man. And all this represents but the preliminary steps to the final attainment of the perfection of faith and service, that experience wherein you shall be filled with all the fullness of God. For all those who are led by the Spirit of God are the sons of God.
Just putting all these famous passages of Paul's into a new context here. You know, let's just keep going here.
The Spirit never drives, only leads. If you are a willing learner, if you want to attain spirit levels and reach divine heights, if you sincerely desire to reach the eternal goal, then the divine Spirit will gently and lovingly lead you along the pathway of sonship and spiritual progress. Every step you take must be one of willingness, intelligent, and cheerful cooperation. The domination of the spirit is never tainted with coercion nor compromised by compulsion.
You know, and again, you can kind of just use that physics analogy that we were using there. You know, it's more stable to pull that thing than it is to push it in the first place. So just that, if no other reason, see? It can pull you along like that, you know, lead you along like that. You know, but then again, you know, they love to bring the compel, coerce pair into play so you can reflect on that distinction. You know, compulsion, to compel, that's drive. You know, so that's literally, you know, so it doesn't, you know, they're just repeating that basically. It isn't literally pushing you forward. And coerce, you know, is more, it's not surrounding you so that you just, you have no choice. It's like, well, I could do, that's the same thing. See, you know, it doesn't surround you so that you just have no option, okay? It doesn't coerce you. You know, it's just one point, you know, and the rest is open to your self-righteousness, okay? You got one point out of the 360 degrees, or if you want to do it, 4 pi stereo radians, if you want to go three-dimensional, you know? I mean, you know, it's just one way, okay?
You know, in my experience, though, it seems like there's times when I've tried every which way to do something and have failed. Mm-hmm. And it's only when I finally say, well, I'll try this way, even though it seems harder.
Yeah.
But that's the way it works.
Yeah.
What is that?
I mean, a lot of it is preconceived opinions. I mean, and a lot of it is, you know, it's just our immaturity. We, you know, we judge things so in temporal, you know, you're speaking to how, you didn't do that because that seemed like the hard way or something. I mean, our ease-drifting souls, I mean, that obviously comes into play there. But another thing, more of a point of recognition, is that our thoughts are initially biased by our relationship to matter. And the best way in a purely material context is the path of least resistance. That's the law of matter. That's not the law of spirit. Spirit's a substance. It has laws, you know, and that, you know, minimization law that we discovered long ago, I mean, it's not just, you know, the path of least resistance isn't just a lazy person, you know, I mean, that's, you know, we literally discovered that in physics, you know, that you literally have laws, that's, you know, all the different ways nature could do it, which way does it do it? You discover it does it in the, you know, in the most efficient way in this, you know, this path of least resistance is the way it does it. You know, so you can minimize a certain variable and you get the correct answer. Okay? But that's not spirit law. Okay? See, so part of it is that, see, you're discovering that what you're doing involves more than just material, even if it appears to be just a material problem. Effort, struggle, conflict, see, you know, to actually make progress, you have to engage the laws of spirit energy too, and they don't work the same way. Yeah?
We got a question. Yeah. When we revoke our decisions by not making them, would that be a negative to not making a decision, or is that Confederation?
Again, you know, all I can say is don't overthink all this stuff. There's lots of terms and whatnot. Just start looking forward. I mean, the simplest thing to get on the right path is to stop looking backward.
And that is a decision,
not a decision. You know, I mean, Jesus tried to explain this, you know. The moment that you're regretting the past, whining over the present, you're vainly hoping for the future. I mean, and it all starts with regretting the past. Your spiritual consciousness is going to make you regret the past. It's aware of ideals, and the past is not it. Okay, so he's telling you that's step one. If you stop regretting the past, forget about the past. Look forward. And if you stop regretting the past, you'll find you'll stop whining over the present too. And you won't be vainly hoping for the future down the road either. See, the reason that you're vainly hoping for the future is because you have no relationship to the future. You're lucky if you even have a relationship to the present. You're totally looking backward. You know, I can't see forward. Well, it's because you're turned around. It's not like complicated. Just stop doing that. Forget about the past. I mean, it's obvious with just a moment reflection that it's not very real. So why would you spend any time contemplating it? Look for something real to think about. And it's just not news to anyone on high that you're not perfect. Just not news. It doesn't go out on the universe broadcasts ever. You know, Chris Halverson was not perfect today. I mean, no one, it's like it's not news.
You know, you can get wisdom.
Right, but just, you know. Right, yeah, you're not going
to
get any wisdom from it regretting it. All right, let's keep going here.
I was just wondering if you noticed that.
Oh, what?
The domination.
Let's see.
It's the one context where you can be dominated safely.
Let's see how it is. Where is it? Where is that again? I lost
it. Domination of the spirit. Right at the very end of that
paragraph. I can't even remember where we are. Oh, here, yeah. Domination of the spirit. Right.
Every other context.
Yeah.
Whatever's dominating you isn't safe.
Right. I mean, it's important. I mean, you're not a creator being. You need to be dominated. But you need to choose what you're going to be dominated by. And whenever they say danger, see, they're talking about that necessary domination, but the negative domination is in play. Yeah.
So we need to be grounded with the material when we engage the spiritual or zingus off.
Well, it's just, I mean, the whole way that we work, I mean, matter has to be dominated by mind. That's just the way matter rolls, true. and mind has to be dominated by spirit. Okay. So what purpose is that mind? Well, there has to be a consecration of will to the perfect will of God the Father, so there's this proper domination, the hierarchy that comes down. Okay.
And when such a life of spirit guidance is freely and intelligently accepted, there gradually develops within the human mind a positive consciousness of divine contact and assurance of spirit communion. Sooner or later, the spirit bears witness with your spirit, the adjuster, that you are a child of God. Already has your own thought adjuster told you of your kinship to God, so that the record testifies that the spirit bears witness with your spirit, not to your spirit.
Okay, now that classic one from Romans 8:16, Paul, we all know because they point to that one a lot, and here's where they really flesh it out. And so you have a capital S spirit and a lowercase s spirit, and parenthetically they say the adjuster. So they're saying to properly interpret what Paul is saying there, translate the lowercase s spirit as the adjuster. Okay, and and they get you to be aware that that's the proper translation by pointing to the preposition. The preposition is with, not to. The lowercase s spirit can't be me, and that would be two. So they're pointing out that properly interpreted, it's the adjuster. Okay, Now, also, they're speaking to how do biblical scholars interpret Romans 8:16? You know, they obviously haven't discovered the adjuster through that passage. If you look at anyone commenting on that, you'll see they always talk, they rationalize it as the Holy Spirit doing something to you, or to try to somehow fudge the width a little bit more. Well, maybe it's to your relationship with Christ. You know, so there's kind of like this line of your relationship to Christ, and this is with that. Okay? It's like, no. However, when you see this, like, oh, okay, so the capital S spirit is one thing, and the lowercase s spirit, that's referring to the adjuster. Well, in this immediate context, they're about, in the next section, to use the to instead of the with. You know, to give you an example of using the word spirit, lowercase s spirit, where it means you.
Even in the paragraph above, with all the capitals.
Well, see, notice that for a long time here we've been using capital S spirit, and we were thinking of the adjuster as being part of capital S spirit, see? Right. See, so they're just pointing out there's a relativity to using this lower and uppercase, word spirit. But in this immediate context, to appreciate it, they're pointing out Paul actually, understood these things a bit and was speaking to that. He had some awareness of the adjuster. All right.
The consciousness of the spirit domination of a human life is presently attended by an increasing exhibition of the characteristics of the spirit in the life reactions of such a spirit-led mortal. For the fruits of the spirit are love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance. Such spirit-guided and divinely illuminated mortals, while they yet tread the lowly paths of toil and in human faithfulness perform the duties of their earthly assignments, have already begun to discern the lights of eternal life as they glimmer on the faraway shores of another world. Already have they begun to comprehend the reality of that inspiring and comforting truth. The kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. And throughout every trial and in the presence of every hardship, spirit-born souls are sustained by that hope which transcends all fear, because the love of God is shed abroad in all hearts by the presence of the divine Spirit.
So even when they're not quoting, they're kind of taking up the biblical sort of poetry. Just the one thing here. This is the spot where they acknowledge that list of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians. So again, we're talking Paul. Okay, and remember, as I always point out, that list of single words is the mere fruits of the Spirit, or the fruits of that which is just merely spiritual. Just the unity things, words like love, joy. You see, those are just spirit words. Okay. Jesus gave us the cosmic fruits of the Spirit. That's up in paper 193, section 2. That Phoenician appearance. When you got that longer list of the cosmic fruits of the Spirit. And each of those is a pair of words instead of a single word. So here's an example. We've talked about this quite a bit tonight. Here's a simple point of contrast to reflect. What's the difference between me having just a spiritual consciousness, which Chris has been saying has all kinds of pitfalls? I could be over-willing it and going to self-righteousness and all these scary-sounding things and whatnot. How do I prevent that from happening? Start with something like this. Reflect on the difference between that list from Galatians, mere fruits of the Spirit, and the list, up there in the Phoenician appearance of the cosmic fruits of the Spirit. What's the difference between love and loving service. Okay? What's the difference between peace and enduring peace? As you begin to go, oh, I understand the difference. The only way that you can go, ah, is if you have some individuality consciousness in your mind. You can't figure this out with mere unity consciousness. All you can understand is the mere spiritual fruits with your unity consciousness. But every one of those pairs of words, one's a unity word and one's an individuality word. And you put them together and you have a super additive consequence, okay, of a cosmic perspective. Okay, so that's a simple exercise. You know, it's just... The whole revel, you know, if you engage the revelation, like you see me doing all the time, where I noticed, you know, look at this preposition and all these. See, that's individuality consciousness. Just the very fact that I'm noticing those little details, I'm not ignoring my unity consciousness while I'm noticing those details. I'm bringing those details into my unity consciousness, and I get a super additive consequence every time I do that. That's what we're talking about. A personal living philosophy appreciates that differential. A mere spiritual child of God doesn't. An example I always use with those, you know, that enduring peace one. You know, a mere spiritually conscious child of God says, "I experienced enduring peace one time." No, you know, not quite getting it. Okay, enduring peace. Now, and if there's one break, it's not enduring peace. It's like, well, I can't even imagine not having a break. That would be peace that passes all understanding. Yeah, it would. That would be the difference, okay, between your initial mind, my initial mind, and the mind of Christ, quote unquote, which is the mind of Jesus, remember. Set the Christ thing aside. It's the mind of the true man, Jesus. Okay? That's the kind of mind you're looking for. A mind that doesn't have any breaks. Okay? It's been mastered. All right, let's get into this. They want to bring us to a crescendo here, so... They aren't going to as incessantly invoke Paul, but they're going to do a little bit, you know, they do a little bit more. And I'll just comment for those of you who are taking the Forging Egg and Dr. Steele summer presentation, you know we spent 2 hours on just this one section. There's, you know, and we could spend 50 hours, okay? There's an infinite thing, number of things you can unpack. We're not going to go into such great depth. But just let's just see it a little bit more in the context here of the rest of the paper, not taking it out so much and dissecting it endlessly. And like I said, see, they were actually they set it up by quoting Paul with Romans 8:16, and that whole bit about that one is about with, and the lowercase s spirit is the adjuster. But in this, the spirit and the flesh, okay. If that wasn't capitalized because it was the title of a section, the spirit word wouldn't be capitalized. It's a lowercase s spirit, and it's not the adjuster. It's you, part of you, apparently the non-flesh you. Yeah. You know, and see how they already set that up. They directly said unspiritualized human mind, you know, in the previous section. That's the flesh. The spiritualized mind is the lowercase s spirit here. They're going to reflect and want you to reflect on the contrast there. Kind of set the capital S spirit aside in many ways. Just understand the two domains of the hourglass.
7. The spirit and the flesh. The flesh, the inherent nature derived from the animal origin races, does not naturally bear the fruits of the divine spirit. When the mortal nature has been upstepped by the addition of the nature of the material sons of God, as the Urantia races were in a measure advanced by the bestowal of Adam, then is the way better prepared for the Spirit of Truth to cooperate with the indwelling adjuster to bring forth the beautiful harvest of the character fruits of the Spirit. If you do not reject this Spirit, even though eternity may be required to fulfill the commission, he will guide you into all truth.
Yeah, and just, you know, to set this up a little bit, to see how they're gently nudging you. You can still kind of stick with it, and you go, well, he must be an adjuster there, you know, he will guide you, and you know, and I guess these character fruits of the lowercase s Spirit, I guess that's the adjuster, you know, and the Spirit of Truth is just helping out, but look a little bit more closely. See, really, they're going back and, you know, put the capital S Spirit is the adjuster and the Spirit of Truth and the Holy Spirit. Okay? The fruits of the lowercase s Spirit, see, again, how'd they start out the paragraph? Reminding you of the lower domain of the hourglass. What does the lower domain need? It needs the upper domain. It needs the spiritualized mind. The spiritualized mind will guide the lower domain into all truth. That's what it's going to be doing forever. 100 trillion years from now, the upper domain of your hourglass will be guiding the lower domain of the hourglass into all truth. That's what it's always going to be like. Parent leading child. That which is one notch higher, teaching that which is one notch lower. How does the whole ascension scheme of education work? It's built into you. You have a teacher and a student. It's like the whole, you know, that whole educational regime. That's how it works. Okay? You know, the spiritualized you, what's benefited from creator ministry, is what's immediately needing to lead. You need to take the reins and choose. You can't passively lay there and wait for God to make, you know, you better or fix your problems or whatever. You need to take the reins. This is what they're trying to get to, is that transition of one must do something as well as be something. And that spiritual consciousness that just has that existential perspective thinks that it just needs to be, and then everything will happen. No, you need to get to the point where the he that's leading is the lowercase s Spirit that's you. So that it would be a to prefix, you know, in that context, instead of a with. That's what they're trying to get at. You know, and the beautiful harvest of the character fruits of that cosmic character that upper domain has a little tiny measure of right now and can have an even greater measure of, you taking the light and cultivating. Those are those two word character fruits of, you know, of the Spirit up there in the Jesus papers. You know, if you have an enduring peace, that'll really help the incessant clamoring part. All right, so keep going here.
Evolutionary mortals inhabiting normal worlds of spiritual progress do not experience the acute conflicts between the spirit and the flesh which characterize the present-day Urantia races. But even on the most ideal planets, pre-Adamic man must put forth positive efforts to ascend from the purely animalistic plane of existence up through successive levels of increasingly intellectual meanings and higher spiritual values.
Could read that next one too.
The mortals of a normal world do not experience constant warfare between their physical and spiritual natures. They are confronted with the necessity of climbing up from the animal levels of existence to the higher planes of spiritual living, but this ascent is more like undergoing an educational training when compared with the intense conflicts of Urantia mortals in this realm of the divergent material and spiritual natures.
So, What did it say there? That it's more like undergoing an educational training. Huh, like the universe education regime where those who are immediately ahead or teach those who are immediately below? See? It's just like I was describing. Okay. You have these, so even on a completely normal world with all the, no rebellion, no default, all this sort of stuff, I mean, there's still two domains of the hourglass. One is teacher and one is student. Why? Because that's the pattern on high, and that so as above, so below. So, the pattern comes down. You're built like that regime. So no wonder you will fit into it so well all the way up. You were of it. You were like it. And then the thing that's woven through these three is this whole bringing in Adamic uplift. Okay. And just without going into any details, you see the key with all that, the reason they're bringing that in and that reflecting on pre-Adamic and post-Adamic and all this, that the Adamic uplift improves a mortal race's relationship to the seventh adjutant. Okay? Seventh adjutant is what establishes the third level of meaning. The neck of the hourglass. The link between the two domains. You noticed how many times in here they've been referring to levels. They're speaking about the levels of meaning, the levels in the lower domain, the levels in the upper domain, moving up those levels, and the level in between the two that's made more dynamic, more connecting by the Adamic uplift. See, so this whole process of being able to have the teacher teach the student is improved by Adamic uplift. There's a limit to how much a teacher can teach, through a tiny little swizzle stick opening in the neck of the hourglass. But you get that opened up a bit, and there's enough room for hand motions, which are very important for communicating ideas, for instance, and they can see those instead of just, I can see his eyeball, but I can't see what his hands are doing. The student's not looking through a keyhole anymore, trying to understand what the teacher's doing. Okay? So that's the basic picture that they're trying to get you to recognize. All right?
The Urantia peoples are suffering the consequence of a double deprivation of help in this task of progressive planetary spiritual attainment. The Kaligastia upheaval precipitated worldwide confusion and robbed all subsequent generations of the moral assistance which a well-ordered society would have provided. But even more disastrous was the Adamic default in that it deprived the races of that superior type of physical nature which would have been more consonant with spiritual aspirations. Urantia mortals are compelled to undergo such marked struggling between the spirit and the flesh because their remote ancestors were not more fully atomized by the Edenic bestowal. It was the divine plan that the mortal races of Urantia should have had physical natures more naturally spirit responsive.
Okay, see, so, there when you see between the spirit and the flesh, if you're thinking that the Urantia mortals are compelled to undergo such marked struggling between the adjuster and themselves, you're not understanding it. That's not what they're at. I mean, if you try to interpret that way, you're trying to figure out, exactly how do I understand how the Adamic thing fits in here and stuff. It's between the two domains of the hourglass. That's what they're talking about. And the connecting link, which is augmented by Adamic uplift. And then again, just that last stressing. It was the divine plan that the mortal races of Urantia should have had physical natures more spirit responsive. Okay. Now, without the hourglass analogy and everything, you can kind of think, this biologic uplift. I remember they telling me about, even gland chemistry is related to spirit receptivity and all this. I guess, they're just talking about this, that it's improves that whole. Well, no, you can think about it more straightforward with the hourglass analogy. you know, the fact that the seventh adjunct is the neck, okay? You want the unspiritualized mind to be able to respond to spirit ministry. Well, it can't directly respond to the capital S spirit ministry. That's way up here, and there's no linkage, okay, directly. Okay, in order for, you know, there to be more, to be more naturally spirit responsive, you've got to have more hole in the neck, a greater area in the neck of the hourglass to connect it to. That's what makes you more spiritually responsive, you know, because those highest levels of adjutant mind are the ones that are most appropriately can be thought of as having being the spirit of something. And the spiritualized mind above, you know, has a relationship with those. And the spiritualized mind is feeling spirit gravity. You know, and if it's touching the tops of the animal origin mind, that animal origin mind gets drawn at the top, and but that mind is connected to the mind below, so it gets drawn, and that mind is connected to the mind below, and that gets drawn up. You know, that spirit gravity gets transferred downward through the associativity all the way down to the foundations of your being, and slowly spiritualizes even the most lowly regions of your mind. At the very least, you know, if it doesn't literally like bring them up into the upper domain, those phases of mind, it at least gets those phases of mind that sort of perforce must stay down there oriented upward. So like your third adjutant is always the spirit of courage and not an energy of loyalty that might be pointed down to loyalty to your baser instincts. Like if it feels good, do it. That's not a loyalty you should cultivate, you know, as an immature animal origin creature, okay?
It's just a battle,
yeah. Right, because you're just exacerbating the problem then, right? You're exacerbating the contrast. The more that the mind that might, I mean, you can't evacuate the lower domain of the hourglass. It has to stay filled with mind, or you have no way to connect, you know, the real inner you to the outer world, you know, to the external world, because that's your associating mechanism. You connect to the external world down through your adjutant mind and out. My spiritualized mind doesn't manipulate my hand, you know, to be able to hug someone. My adjutant mind has to do that. So I have to have mind down there. But if I can get all of that mind that's down there oriented upward, yeah, then I've got a, I have a what? You know, they've been, you know, referring to it. I have a mastered self, right? A mastered self has all of those impulses and urges, all those arrows. The mind has arrows in it. You want those arrows to be pointed upward. And a mastered mind is a mind that doesn't have randomly pointing arrows in it, especially the incessant clamoring ones where the arrow direction is changing every 10 seconds. And the more, and the higher the adjutant, the more rapidly you change. Your sixth adjutant is just like this. I mean, it's crazy animated. You know, that arrow changes every 10 seconds unless you say, no, point up. Always up. Not occasionally when you just happen to flip through vertical on your way past. Peace! Oh, no, not anymore. Peace! Okay, no. Enduring peace. Never moving from the vertical. Okay.
Notwithstanding this double disaster to man's nature and his environment, present-day mortals would experience less of this apparent warfare between the flesh and the spirit if they would enter the spirit kingdom, wherein the faith sons of God enjoy comparative deliverance from the slave bondage of the flesh in the enlightened and liberating service of wholehearted devotion to doing the will of the Father in heaven. Jesus showed mankind the new way of mortal living, whereby human beings may very largely escape the dire consequences of the Caligastic rebellion and most effectively compensate for the deprivations resulting from the Adamic default. The spirit of the life of Christ Jesus has made us free from the law of animal living and the temptations of evil and sin. This is the victory that overcomes the flesh, even your faith.
So that whole bit of tweaking Paul a little bit, so it isn't just the law of sin and death, you know, the law of animal living bringing in the lower domain of the hourglass, you know, fleshing that out a little bit. Okay, so, you know, here you see them, you know, kind of getting to the point that there's nothing I can do about the fact that all those millennia ago, Adam and Eve, you know, couldn't have enduring peace for more than 100 and some years. You know, and basically they didn't have peace after the first day. You know, we all know if you go back and read that story, by nightfall, the first day, they didn't have peace. Mm-hmm. They were already an arrow that was wandering around. It didn't last 24 hours. Okay? It's just inertia that carried it for 100 years. Okay? It wasn't choice. The choice was made, you know, in the first day, and it was not going to go well. But I can overcome all that. The fact that I have a tiny little, you know, aperture, yeah, good word, tiny little neck of the hourglass, tiny little opening, because, you know, even your faith, I've been given the ability to transcend. There's a spiritualized self that was given to me up there by grace. I can just transcend the opening and go up, you know, as they say, if you would enter the spirit kingdom, if you would go up into the upper domain of the hourglass, if you would enter the temple, just choose to be what you were given by grace. Yeah, you're a pile of monkeys down in the lower domain, yes, in incessant clamoring. But by grace, you're also this stable, spiritualized self. Reach up, you know, that federated thing? Federate yourself. Reach up. Instead of trying to confederate yourself by trying to make something out of the pile of monkeys, okay, reach up. Federate yourself. Go up. Grab a hold of that. And so... you know, there's a sober, you know, between the lines there. You know, have you experienced, you know, basically apparent warfare, you know, between the flesh and the spirit in your life? You know, look what they said. You know, they didn't say you should get more of you up in the temple. No, they said you should enter it. They're just reminding you the extent to which we have this conflict in our life is the extent to which we're delusional in thinking that we're truly spiritual, that we really are using our spiritualized mind. If you were using your spiritualized mind, you wouldn't be this constant tension. And so they're trying to point out that it's like, well, I'm doing what all humans have told me to do. They told me the solution is to do such and so, and it gets me more spiritual. No, they haven't understood. They've been telling you to go over here in the lower domain of the hourglass to this really flaky, fuzzy space over here. And that doesn't help you. It may be a more unity-like part of the lower domain, but it's not true spirit. The true spirit is above. Okay. We've all been given a foothold up there by grace, but it's sad to record that so few persons have used that gift of grace. Even it's a minimal size up there to begin that you're given by grace, but if we just use that, immediately everything would change. You know, not to mention what it'd be like if you grew it tenfold, had it grown tenfold, of course, that we really mean, you know. That peace that passes all understanding would be just completely natural then. Think how much of Jesus, the man, lived in the temple as a first circler. how much cosmic consciousness that he had to go up those cosmic levels to get to the first psychic circle, to that highest cosmic level. Okay, he entered the kingdom way back when he was young, and he grew. All right, the sons of God, wherein the faith sons of God enjoy comparative deliverance from the slave bondage of the flesh. You just reflect for a moment. Have I experienced deliverance from that slave bondage of the flesh? Or am I still grappling with it? Oh, maybe I'm looking in the wrong direction. Maybe I'm looking sideways instead of up.
It's really important to recognize that when they speak of flesh, they're talking about the unspiritualized mind.
Yes.
Not the flesh.
Right.
Common translation.
Not the protoplasm.
No, it's not that stuff.
Your protoplasm doesn't have any issues. Okay, you know, your oxygen molecules don't need any, you know, reformation. Your carbon molecules are just fine, et cetera. I suppose I should say maybe atoms. I was thinking in the context of, you know, your organic molecules, the oxygen and carbon atoms in those organic molecules.
Are they at war with each other?
Right, there's no war, there's no nothing, right? You know, they connect to spirit the other way around, and they're perfectly in sync. Okay, it's the intermediate, you know, the mind stuff that's the issue. Okay, keep going here.
Those God-knowing men and women who have been born of the Spirit experience no more conflict with their mortal natures than do the inhabitants of the most normal of worlds, planets which have never been tainted with sin nor touched by rebellion. Faith sons work on intellectual levels and live on spiritual planes far above the conflicts produced by unrestrained or unnatural physical desires. The normal urges of animal beings and the natural appetites and impulses of the physical nature are not in conflict with even the highest spiritual attainment, except in the minds of ignorant, mistaught, or unfortunately over-conscientious persons.
Yep, as I always say, one of the most delightful lines in the entire Revelation, the unfortunately over-conscientious persons, excuse me. Briefly there, you know, the normal urges of animal beings. So like I said, you know, these arrows that don't start pre-oriented, okay, there's none of those arrows that can't be rightly oriented. Okay, that's what they say. All those normal arrows can be oriented upward. There's no fundamental issue there. Now, ignorant. There's a lot of people that don't know that. Don't know that you can master yourself. You can orient the arrows upward. Okay? You notice it said conflicts that are produced by unrestrained, you know, unmastered, unoriented arrows. Okay, mistaught. You could be ignorant of the fact that you can master yourself. You could also be told that you can't, and that's very prevalent in modern society. Almost every commercial on TV, you know, is telling you, well, now you can't do this yourself. You need to take this drug, or you need to, pay big bucks for this program, or whatever. Buy this tape, or whatever. Yeah, that's being mistaught. You know, and it's mistaught, wrongly taught. That's evil. Okay, it's evil to be taught that you have no control over yourself. No, you have all control over yourself. God doesn't even have any. You have all control. Okay? And then the unfortunately over-conscientious persons, that conscience, okay, that's the contrast between the two domains of the hourglass. That's your conscience, the awareness of the differential between the upper and the lower domain. The spiritualized mind you were given by grace compared to the unspiritualized mind. The contrast is called conscience. Okay? And unfortunately, over-conscientious persons are the ones that just, oh my goodness, that's in contrast, and that's in contrast, and that's in contrast, and that's in, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. It's, you know, there's just too many contrasts. No, nothing's hopeless. Because the spiritualized mind has a relationship to the whole. And if you bring the whole down in, whole, through the hole, the neck of the hourglass, hole, okay, it doesn't matter how many parts are down there. Every part is engaged all at the same time with one whole. It's not hopeless. It's actually quite straightforward. The whole engages every arrow simultaneously, and they all are oriented upward by spirit gravity. And spirit gravity grabs a hold of those arrows and, whoosh, you know, what size wrench do I need for this one? How many calories is it going to take? No, spirit gravity just orients the arrows. Okay? It's just like, you know, what do I have to do to make a ball fall if I drop it? Nothing. Okay? Gravity does it for you.
Let it fall.
Okay? The fact that there's spirit gravity is an incredible good, you know, bit of good news. Okay? Okay, so that last line, unfortunately over conscientious, that's what, it's so, that's so much the issue. Oh, and before I say that, besides unrestrained, you notice the unnatural? Okay, remember this is teachable mind, that adjutant mind down there. And some of the initial tendencies because of, you know, genetics, that's bad enough, but you can, you know, it's teachable. You can teach it wrong too. Okay. And the more of those, that wrong orientation is purposed by your will, the more problematic this becomes. I mean, you can't overcome sin with goodness. It doesn't matter how infinite the roots are of the spirit of goodness, the adjuster. Goodness cannot overcome sin. The adjuster is holy, is always subservient to your will, and sin is willed. You know, you can overcome evil with goodness, but not sin. So, you know, that unnatural can be very, you know, very extreme and problematic. Okay. So let go, like I said, you know, a lot of this is just let go of the will thing and just kind of humbly try to engage the universal harmony element here before you try to will much of anything. Okay. Because we're pretty ignorant to start with. Okay, now back to the unfortunately over-conscientious, so we can wrap this up here. That's so significant in the whole history of spiritual consciousness, you know, of religious, quasi-religious people, that they devote the last paragraph of this paper. They devote the last paragraph of this first block of papers, these first three papers of part two, to that issue. Because it is so problematic. You've got to let go of this. You know, unfortunately over conscientious, like regretting the past, for instance. Regretting the past. You've got to let go of that. Okay. So they devote this, you know, this last inspiring paragraph, you know, where the specificity is speaking right to those things. You know, what is unfortunately over conscientious look like? Look at the list that they're about to give you here.
Having started out on the way of life everlasting, having accepted the assignment and received your orders to advance, do not fear the dangers of human forgetfulness and mortal inconstancy. Do not be troubled with doubts of failure or by perplexing confusion. Do not falter and question your status and standing. For in every dark hour, at every crossroad in the forward struggle, the Spirit of Truth will always speak, saying, "This is the way." presented by a mighty messenger temporarily assigned to service on your ranch.
Okay. So you see that list, like I was saying, you can reflect on that. This is the way, you know, so the Spirit of Truth is above the upper domain. You know, that voice comes down into the upper domain of the hourglass from the Spirit of Truth. It doesn't go from above the upper domain down into the lower domain. It goes from the above the upper domain into the upper domain. Who has to actually tell the animal origin mind, this is the way? You do. You, the teacher, have to pass that word along, pass that word down. Okay, you can't just expect the Spirit of Truth to magically speak to your adjutant mind that message. It can't. You have to hear that with the upper domain. Well, if we haven't entered the kingdom, you're not there to hear that. You know, so you think, well, I'm pretty sure. They're saying, actually, it's not too likely any of us have heard it. You know, they're trying to again remind you. Take that step up there genuinely. Hear that voice and be the teacher. You know, one step ahead. You know, on the subsequent Marantia world, teaching the ascending students just behind. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be more like undergoing an educational training, like they said. Okay. And by the way, this is the way. It's a very in the very last thing. They hearken you back to Isaiah. it's like enough of Paul. Let's go old school.
this is very comforting.
Yes, of course it is. Right. It also is just, you know, there's always hope, but they're trying to remind you of some of the facts. You know, don't try to fulfill that hope with wishful thinking, merely wishful thinking. One must do something as well as be something. You know, choose to be that higher seated self, the one that just knows these things, the one you go, you know, I can easily picture that thing having enduring peace. If you can't easily picture the you that you know having enduring peace, you need to find a better you. It's the one that's up there. It can see that. It can know that. It seems apparent, you know, straightforward, that a little time will lead to enduring peace. Okay, then just one last little thing. Presented by a mighty messenger, temporarily assigned to service on your rancho. So, is this mighty messenger one of the 12 in the Revelatory Commission? No. This is one that's gotten assigned to write this paper. Yeah. So we've seen the first two papers here in part two. The first one was a mighty messenger that was obviously on the commission. You know, it says point blank that mighty messenger is, you know, working there on Salvington and got assigned to the commission by Gabriel. And the second one, like I told you, is the chief of the archangels. And at the end of the next paper, you can see that he's on the commission. This one is, you know, not. See, so here we're already seeing in the third paper, you know, as you'll see in a number of these papers, you've got it, you know, a lot of authors in part two that aren't part of the initial 12, or, you know, not part of the 12 that are on the Revelatory Commission. I suppose I should say it that way. Just to appreciate the growing, you know, the growing complexity compared to part one, like I was saying. All right. So then, yeah. So the next time we'll take up the task of moving into the next block of papers. We've got lots of beings in local universes that we need to figure out. So that's what we'll start next time. Let's take a moment here.